вопрос по поводу Шишаку, Ловка. А ее вот Хабрагу сам изложил в плане, ну, кто-то записал под его диктовку, или это он прям своей рукой написал?
Сам.
Или считается, чем сам?
The question about Шикшаштака, who was the author? Mahaprabhu or someone else? Or did he write it with his own hand? Yes, Mahaprabhu was the author and he had written this mantra. This is the only writing that we have from Mahaprabhu.
Очень такой стиль, ведь, ну, сначала начинается один размер страфы, а потом как будто, ну, какие-то внутренние переживания совсем по-другому, то есть во времени, то есть там, не такой прям забыл стих и написал, а вот один как бы начал писать, а потом уже совсем все по-разному
получилось. Это Шикшаштака. Eight verses have different meters, or poetical meters. Mahaprabhu was the expert in Sanskrit literature. He was the real Gyani. He knew Vedas by heart, and he was so learned that at age of 16 he had his own school. He had the professor in his own school. So he also he explained the Nirukti dictionary, and every word in this dictionary he ascribed to every word, he ascribed the meaning of Krishna, saying that Krishna, the meaning Krishna is everywhere in everything that we observe. Beyond, we can derive meaning Krishna. So for him, it was not difficult to write poetry in different poetical meters, because he was teacher of poetry also. So Krishna tells Arjuna, first Arjuna asks him, what is the matter and what is the spirit? So Krishna, in 13th chapter, explains him. This is a very, very, peculiar answer, with very unusual, unusual verses, where it seems that it has no meaning, because Krishna says when describing material nature, he counts such objects as sound, earth, fire, senses, and then he adds to that category, he adds anger, he adds also thirst and hunger, and these are in the same row with material elements, and this is if we think it deeper, then it may perplex us. how can you put in the same line something tangible like water, space, and then hunger and anger. And actually, this is true. So Krishna says that the matter, the material nature, it is only the state of consciousness. So what we think of material objects, this is only different states of our consciousness. So we can understand that hunger is a certain state of consciousness. It's state of my consciousness. Hunger or happiness or grief. This is obviously we all accustomed to think that this is a state of consciousness. But how earth and fire can be a state of my consciousness? This is very, very unusual. And actually, this is true. Fire and earth is really state of consciousness. When I observe something, it is not that I observe something, but I put myself in certain state of consciousness. And in this consciousness, what I perceive, in this state of consciousness, what I perceive, we may call fire, or we may call earth. So this is very interesting. It's actually Krishna explained this in the 13th chapter. So he says, ether, air, fire, water, and earth, ego, intelligence, unmanifested matter. Unmanifested matter, it's a pure state of energy. Energy which has no form. This is all energy, but it in our senses it takes some form. But there is, it is called primary state of energy, which has no form. So unmanifest material nature. This is what. Then 10 senses, mind, and 5 object of senses. Likes, dislikes, happiness, unhappiness, the aggregate, consciousness, and determinations, these are all summarily known as field and its transformation. The field means the field of action, something that I observe and something that I transform. The jiva soul is known as kshetragya, one who knows kshetra. But when jiva assumes that he can transform something, this is called maya, then he immediately falls into state of illusion. Because jiva can only observe, can only register in his consciousness the transformation. But when jiva thinks, oh, this is me who transform the state of matter, this is called maya, because it is not truth. This is what we say interesting, that Krishna calls material world as a field, and in this field he puts mind and 5 objects, which is sound, surface, and smell, and then he says likes, dislikes, happiness, unhappiness. Actually, this is all happiness, unhappiness, likes and dislikes. These are all material elements or parts of that nature that we observe. So any questions? Because if there is no questions, that means it is not interesting. Okay, let us start from a little bit from the beginning. When Arjuna asked Krishna about material nature, Arjuna says, "O Keshava, I would like to know about material nature. The person and the field, the knower of the field, knowledge and the object of knowledge." The Supreme Lord said, "O Arjuna, this body is known as field. One who knows the field is described by learned as the knower of the field." This is what I said before. By body, we don't necessarily mean the physical body. Anything that we think belong to us in Vedic philosophy considered to be body. If you think that some land, if you think that some land belong to you, this is also your body. The field. It is the general category, the field. It is everything that you think belong to you. The land, the house, the relatives, the physical body, your thoughts, this is all the field, the body. O Bharata, you should also know me as knower of all fields. This knowledge of the field and the knower of the field is true knowledge, in my opinion. The knowledge of the field and the knower of the field. Now hear from me briefly what field is. In constitution, transformation, causes and effects, and who the knower of the field is, and of his potency. This has been taught in many ways by various sages in different Vedas and the aphorisms of Brahma Sutra with its conclusive logic. Okay. So again, we read 5 primary elements: ether, air, fire, water, and earth, ego, intelligence, and the unmanifest material nature, 10 senses, the mind, the 5 objects of senses, likes, dislikes, happiness, unhappiness, the aggregate, consciousness, and determination. All these are summarily known as the field and its transformations. Desirelessness of honor, pridelessness, non-violence, forbearance, honesty, service to the master, purity, stability, self-control, detachment from the objects of senses, absence of egoism, awareness of the miseries of birth, disease, old age and death, worldly detachment, absence of doting on children, wife, home, etc., constant equanimity in desirable or undesirable circumstances, undeviating pure devotion to me, residing in solitary place, indifference to mundane association, constantly in self-knowledge, and the vision of goal of true knowledge. All these qualities have been said to be knowledge. Anything contrary to this are considered ignorance. Now I shall describe the object of knowledge, realizing which one attains the nectar of life. Resting in me, it is known as Brahman, eternal, neither being nor not being. Everything are his hands and feet, everywhere are his eyes, heads, mouths, and ears. He pervades the entire universe. So in this verse, Krishna says that Brahman, Brahman means the unperishable, the single existence, or true being, something that never stops its existence. This is called Brahman. So Krishna says that the object of knowledge, or the anything valuable to know about, is only Brahman. Everything else is not worth being known. That means that if we know something that will perish, will stop to exist after a certain time, that means we don't know anything. The knowledge is only when we call knowledge something that we put into the eternal. If we know something non-eternal, then it is not knowledge at all. So Krishna says here. And these eternal objects of knowledge are different. First of all, this is ourself. Ourself is eternal. That means to know myself is knowledge. Then there is the super soul, or common soul for all that exist. This is also, to know that super soul is also knowledge. So this is what Krishna says in this verse. Да, она, душа, она наблюдает за изменением своего сознания.
Так она не изменяет его.
Она
только
изменяет. Она регистрирует, да.
Но не как бы не трансформирует. Но она же изменяется, сознание.
Сознание меняется, душа нет. Ум. И под сознанием ум меняется. Ум меняется, но душа не меняется. Она меняет свое состояние. То есть она меняется.
Ну, как
English. The question is about if the soul, jiva soul, can only observe, but if he observes changes, and these changes are his changes, that means he also changed himself. But I say that the soul, in his initial state, only observes, but he produces mind, and mind has one characteristic: mind can change. So when the soul observes the changes of his mind, he thinks that he also changes.
But can he influence all these changes of his own mind?
Yes, by putting himself in certain strata, in certain states or gunas, he can change state of mind.
But we cannot say that he is changing it by himself.
You may say that he changed himself, but actually he only observes. It is like It depends on when we drive the car, right? If we look outside the windshield, if we look outside the car, we think that we drive. We think that we change our position. But when we concentrate on the steering wheel and we don't see what is outside the car, then immediately we realize that we only sit. So this is only the question of where we put our consciousness in. If we put our consciousness outside, then we may say that we change, or we move, or we acquire, or we lose things going on, like outside the car. But when we concentrate on, when we concentrate inside ourselves, we draw attention to ourselves in the heart, then we don't see the changes of gunas. We only see ourselves. And if we are able to concentrate more and more on ourselves, then finally we will see the light. Because we can see only anything that we can see, we can see in light of some source of light. And when we take away our attention from ourselves and change it to the source of life, then we will see the super soul, the united soul that pervades everything, the common soul of all life, of all soul of all living beings. But this is next step. Whether we change or we move or we stand still depends only on where we direct our consciousness, our attention, like in the car. And the consciousness initially have three basic... initially consciousness has no state. I mean, it has no certain state. But when consciousness starts to move, then three states or three gunas arise. Gunas are different states. The very flexible state of consciousness, which is called sattva, or transparent. Through this guna, because it is very transparent, it's like ether. We can see the truth, or we can see the silhouette of the truth. Then there is more dense state of consciousness. This is rajas. It is more dense, and we hardly can see the silhouettes. And then the third guna, or third state of consciousness, very dense. We cannot see anything. It's almost like we sleep, like deep sleep. So when all these states of consciousness intermingle or interchange, then we can see the variety of the world. Anything that we observe, any conception or any object or any phenomena, it is combination of three gunas. And in Sanskrit language, guna means also, how do you say, when lady make this kasu, как это?
Косичку.
Как это по-английски? Like, how do you call it this in English?
Braid.
Braid.
Yes.
Okay. So gunas technically in Sanskrit language means braid. Three braids we have. And this is very, very precise word, because with this braid someone is tight. And this braid, when they interchange, you can make the material. You can make cloth. if you make it like this, like then you make material or cloth. So these three braids we have. По-русски это прядь. Гуна буквально означает прядь.
Не коса, а только кусок волос.
Прядь. Плетеная прядь. Пряжа. So when they combine together, then they produce a sound, and then the images and taste, this all invisible. These braids, they are, if we take them by one, they are not invisible. They are invisible. We cannot register them. But when we make them together, then they produce phenomena and conceptions and objects.
But the three gunas always exist at the same time, and they need to be in balance.
Not need. They just fact of life. Okay. Three gunas, they exist, and they tie us up. Because they make objects, and we become attached to these objects. But actually, we are attached not to the objects; we are attached to the state of mind. When we say, "I had nice holidays on the sea beach," there was a nice sea, it was nice weather, it was sun and good hotel. Actually, we're attached not to the sea or to the sun or to the beach. We're attached to the state of consciousness that we experienced in that circumstances. It's not that the sea or sun important for us. It's important that we had some nice feeling there. This is how gunas work. They cheat us. They produce certain objects, and we become attached to these objects. But we foolishly think that we like the objects. Actually, we like the state or feeling that we derive from contact with this object. So once we realize that the peace of mind, or let's say happiness, is not a quality of the objects, the objects that do not produce good feelings to us. Good feelings are produced from within, from the state of me. Then we become not attached to this, to objects. Because objects and feelings have nothing to do. They're not attached, they're not, one does not produce another. So this is why Krishna says that everything that you need, the feeling of happiness, it is within you. you can be the source of well-being, of your own well-being. It is within you. The good weather is not outside. It is within you. So Krishna says in many, in Bhagavad Gita, in many verses, he says that the soul, or you, is self-sufficient.
Hey.
Они не мешают. Шум. Шум не там, шум здесь. The noise is not outside, the noise is here.
Why the same sound within all the heads?
Every head produces sound.
I hear the same one.
Before you went to pacify them, I didn't hear them. Okay. So Krishna says that the soul is self-sufficient. Everything that soul needs is resides within soul. Atmarama means everything that you need, you have within yourself. Within yourself.
So we need detachment from everything, but attachment to Krishna.
First, let's start with from attachment to our own self, our own soul.
Yes. Our own soul.
Yes. Because when we become attached, when we kill material world, kill within our consciousness, means to destroy it by qualities, and realize that all qualities and all feelings are residing within ourselves. So. And search for happiness or search for good, artha. Artha means something good for me. Starts the real search for good starts when I realize who am I. Because when I think that I am the object of this world, the body, then I search happiness for the body, not for myself, but for someone else, for this flesh. But when I realize that I am not material elements, I am not earth, I am not fire, I am not anything that I can see. This is the symptom of knowledge, to realize that anything that I can see, anything that I can think of, is not me, because I cannot think of myself, because myself is more subtle than thought. The thought cannot embrace something like glass cannot stop the light, mind cannot stop the self. So once I realize that I am not earth, I am not water, I am not fire, just imagination, then I will search happiness, which is in philosophy it's called immanent, that is residing within me. I cannot get rid of this. Immanent means search for happiness. Then I will start searching for happiness for myself, not for this earth. I will stop looking for happiness for my water. I consist of water, fire, and all life. I try to make happy fire and water, not myself. So once I realize I am not fire and water and earth, then I will start searching for happiness for myself. And on this path, I will find Krishna, because Krishna is the source of happiness for myself. Krishna is giving impulse for me to search for happiness. And He is the happiness. So happiness makes us to search for Him. Look, he says in Gita that he is the cause of happiness and he is the object or goal of happiness. Same. And this is our great luck, that happiness is the cause and the goal. Same person.
Why is it?
I don't know, this is miracle.
No, why we are lucky because of that?
Because one who invites us to be happy, and happiness is the same. We don't have to divide ourselves. What is better, one who calls for happiness and the happiness? He is the same.
You always separate the meaning of mind and intelligence. Like you say, that mind is making decision. I like it or don't like it. Intelligence is what is more appropriate for
the goal.
For the goal, yes. But I'm wondering where is our knowledge? It's knowledge and the process of like logic or decision making, which is actually, it's not the decision that you like or don't like, or it's not a goal, not related to goal, for example, knowledge of science or languages or some logic. Where is going on? Where is it in mind or intelligence?
Or intelligence is, as you said, the device within us that tells difference between what is suitable for attaining goal and what is not suitable for that goal. And then Krishna says, so there are different. There are two kinds of intelligence, buddhi. Buddhi, material buddhi, and spiritual buddhi, or super intelligence. So when you have a temporary goal, some goal that will cease to exist after some time, and you intelligently go for this goal, then it is called material intelligence. It is not real intelligence. Or like, okay, you have the goal to become a general in the army. So anything that helps you to become that general is known as intelligence. Every step that makes you closer to your goal is intelligence step. And every step that takes you away from that goal is called non-intelligent. Okay? But that goal, when you become a big general or big politician or big writer or anything big in this material world, that goal will cease to be, will stop to exist after some time, and you will lose everything. That means it is not really intelligent. But when your goal is something eternal, that when you acquire that, when you attain that, you will never lose it, then everything that makes you closer to this goal is called real intelligent, vibhuti, real intelligent. So there's two kinds of
intelligence.
Озарение другое.
Это вот к чему относится? Вот само знание, какие-то науки, когда мы учили, языки учили, когда мы там логически...
Okay, learning sciences. When you learn this to attain something that will stop to exist after some time, this is called ignorance. Though it may be within certain scope, it may be very intelligent. Like when children play, they have their own money, Like they have, sometimes they have, they call money the corks, the cups of the bottles, of the cups of beer bottles. So within themselves they say, okay, let us call this money, and who will collect more of this beer cups, he is called rich. More, he becomes more rich. And we adults, we know that this is all stupid. Though, within their game, one may be more intelligent and less intelligent. One who acquainted more these corks, he is more intelligent. But for us, it has no value. So in this material world, we also acquire these beer corks, but we call it in different names. We call it diploma of professor of university. It is of the same category when children say, okay, now you have Budweiser title. One who has Budweiser or whatever, Singer, whatever beer is there. He is more, he has better position. So in this world also, you are a professor of university, or you are the scientist, or you are the president of this country. These are all corks. And to acquire that position, you need to be very intelligent. But actually, if we look at this, at this game from eternal point of view, we will see this is all stupid. This has no value. All these diplomas and names and titles and fame and material position, it has no value.
Is thinking artificial?
What?
Artificial.
Artificial?
Is thinking a form of künstliche Intelligenz?
Is thinking a form of artificial intelligence?
Is thinking... I don't... I understand. I understand. I have...
Form.
I don't really understand. I mean... just combination of words that have no meaning to me so far. I'm sorry. Thinking is thinking. Thinking... the process of thinking is the process of producing images. Images, we produce two categories or two kinds of images in our mind. One kind of images that we try to run away because we don't want that, because our position will become weaker if we acquire that. And another kind of objects we try to perish. We try to acquire. One kind of objects we try to run away or derive, and one kind of objects we want to acquire. And we produce this. So first we produce some objects, and perceive this object by our senses, we call it our dream come true. Or we reached the success. So let's say we produced the image of car, red fast sport car, just popped up in our mind. But it exists only in our mind. We cannot touch it, we cannot smell it. But when after some years or some months, we can smell, touch, and hear this image. We say, I reached the success. I'm successful. But actually, when we touch, when we smell or hear, we also do it by our mind. But we spend so much time to move the imaginary image into the senses, and we spend so much time actually, but we just move from one place of our mind to another place of our mind. Because when we dream, when we see dreams in at night, we also can dream that we drive the car, and it looks like real. Actually, there is no difference. This is called illusion. We try to realize imaginary images or objects, realize, make them so-called true.
Вот в материальном мире нам, с точки зрения психологии, даны, формально назовем четыре качества характера. То есть сомнение, пневматик, силоколик и трихолик. Да?
Но мы таких категорий не делаем.
Да. Но просто есть ли объяснение, с точки зрения магической философии, как это вот понятно, что. То есть человек, который эмоциональный, может быть, который менее эмоциональный. Как взаимосвязь этого характера и ум?
Это одно и то же. Это все вот эти четыре, которых назвали, это просто люди под разным влиянием трех гун, под влиянием разной пропорции этих гун. Те, кто those who search for knowledge, the pala or fruits of material world, they, as we always say, they are different, and they are divided by the time of their existence. So the most durable fruit of material world is knowledge. Knowledge lasts longer than anything else. So those who search for knowledge, those who search for very long-lasting fruit or result, they are within a mode of goodness. Anyone who wants to acquire something that lasts long, he, by definition, is in mode of goodness. He is more pacified. He is more peaceful. He can see things. He does not run after things that last very short time. Okay, so they are in mode of goodness. Those who long for a less lasting object, which is power, they are in mode of passion. Those who want power, and partially those who want money, and money and power, they are intermingled. They are more passionate. They become envious, or they become angry easily. Those who search for knowledge, although what to speak of those who acquired knowledge, they not easily become angry, because you cannot take knowledge from them. If I have some knowledge and I give knowledge to you, I don't lose it. But if I have power, and I give power to you, then I lose it, or money. This is why those who want power or money, they are very they're very concerned. They're always concerned. They always try to not to lose the power. Those who have knowledge, they're not afraid of losing, because you cannot take knowledge from. So knowledge, power, money, and health or strong body. They are shudras. Those who have muscle body, they are shudras, because they shudras for their being, for their existence, they need strong body, because they work hard. Shudras, they work hard. This is the means of their existence. To continue their existence, they need strong body. So for them it is very important. And this is very short lasting fruit of material.
Oh, what is shorter, money or body?
Body.
Body shorter.
Body shorter, money more, power is more, and knowledge is knowledge or wisdom. So when you say there are four categories of psychology, or what they say, psychological types of people, sanguinic, choleric, what is choleric, sanguinic, then phlegmatic, and melancholic. So these are all, yes, actually these categories, these are all those who are under influence of sattva, rajas, mixed with sattva, then rajas mixed with tamas and pure tamas. So these are four categories.
But all three of them is a prison what you have? Sattva and tamas and rajas?
Yes, yes, they all, of course.
You get one in one person?
Yes, of course. More than that, in one person it is not possible to have one. It is always mixture. No, it's always mixture. Krishna, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says in chapter 3, Gunas of Material Nature, he says they are always present in all three present in one person. Sometimes pervade, one pervade and suppress two others, then another, but they're always together.
Is it possible to change the dominance?
Yes.
By the agents of influence?
Yes, by agents of influence, as we said this morning. You put yourself forcibly in certain atmosphere. You make yourself to be in certain atmosphere, and this atmosphere will change yourself. Yes, yes. To put yourself in certain atmosphere, to associate with certain agents of influence. It may be people, it may be revelations of certain. It's also people. Yes, or it may be association with certain period of time. If you make yourself to wake up at 4 in the morning and do job, main your job in the morning, and force yourself to go asleep at 10 at night. So if you divide your time scope by certain periods and do certain work, or at certain time, if you sleep in time of tamas and work or think in time of sattva, then you make yourself to be under influence of that certain agents of influence. Or food. If you eat certain food at certain time, then also you make yourself to be under the influence of that agents of influence. And as for our practice, our bhakti yoga, we say to put yourself, to place yourself under the influence of devotees of God, because they are agents, but they are not agent of a certain gunas. Time is divided by periods, and these periods are under influence of certain gunas, tamas, rajas, same food also. But devotees of God, they are not agents of sattva or tamas or rajas. They are agents of nirguna. So to be under the influence, like today we read what Krishna called knowledge is to live in a solitary place. That means not to communicate with people, because all people, more or less, they are agents of gunas. So not to communicate with them. It does not mean that you don't ask what's the time. It means that you consciously tell yourself, I don't want to be influenced by them. What they tell me is not important for me. Because what they tell us, you should look better, you should live longer, you have to have more, you have to become successful. So you have to tell these people, maybe not in face, but say, okay, what you say is not important for me. I have my gurus, Vaishnavas, and Vaishnavas say that Humility, tolerance, and respect everyone, and not want to someone respect you. This is what is important, what is valuable. But agents of this world, they tell us it is very important that people respect you. This is called success. When more people respect you, that is called success. But we don't want this success. Why should they respect me? Because what is respect? It's chemical reaction in someone's brain. Why I should ask some chemical reaction? Let his brain have some other reaction. Why I should spend all my life that for that chemical reaction go in someone's brain, someone's gray substance? I spent years and years and years that people feel respect to me. It is not something valuable. Okay, enough for today. Hare Krishna.